More of Lake Effect Now, I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Even though church services have been canceled or scaled back around the region, that doesn't mean the Christian calendar has stopped. Millions of Christians around the world observe Lent this time of year. The traditional 40-day period in preparation for Easter is usually marked by abstaining from certain indulgent foods and behaviors. Fish fries are popular in Milwaukee in part because of the Catholic practice of skipping meat during Lent. And just about an hour north of Milwaukee, there's a community of Eastern Catholic monks who really do take that meatless thing seriously. Holy Resurrection Monastery in the town of St. Nazian's, Wisconsin, belongs to the Romanian Greek Catholic Church. Their faith is almost identical to the Eastern Orthodox, but they're in union with the Pope of Rome, and thus the rest of Wisconsin's Catholics. Lake Effect producer Julian Haida recently visited the monastery's chef, Deacon Moses, to talk about what it's like to cook the Orthodox way, abstaining from all animal products and even skipping wine and olive oil.
We have four traditional fasting periods, Lent before Easter, the fast before Christmas, which is another 40-day fast, and then the Peter and Paul fast and the Dormition fast. By the time you add that all up and all of the Wednesdays and Fridays, it comes to about half the year.
Now I want to ask you a little bit about your story. You are now feeding a group of about 10 monks, correct?
Yes.
So about 10 monks here in central Wisconsin. But before this, you were a professionally trained chef. Tell me a bit how you ended up here.
Oh, that's a long story.
All right. Nutshell, I mean, I believe you studied at a very well-known culinary school.
Yes, I studied at the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, New York, back in the early 80s. Went on to have a very good career as a chef. But I had always wanted to be a monk as well. I grew up a Roman Catholic, but my job took me to Greece for a year, where I was introduced to the Byzantine style of Catholicism and Orthodoxy, and I just fell in love with the Byzantine spirituality, the liturgy, and all of that. So eventually I changed rites, and finally when I was around 30, I decided it was time to pursue my vocation as a monk. So
how did you know you'd be able to balance your new vocation with, for lack of a better word, your old vocation, which was in the kitchen?
Well, when I decided to pursue my vocation as a monk, I really didn't think I would be able to. I thought maybe once in a while or quite a ways down the road I might be assigned to the kitchen, but I was ready to give it up if I had to pursue it. But thankfully, the abbot, unlike some other abbots, his philosophy is to put people to do the work that they're best suited for. He knew my history and put me in the kitchen.
So it worked out.
Yes, it did work out, and I think the rest of the brothers are happy about that.
And the people who visit the monastery as well. I mean, you've built a little bit of a reputation for yourself here in the Manitowoc, Sheboygan area.
A little bit. One of the ways that the monastery supports itself is through our ministry with guests. We have people come to do private retreats. We have groups that come, I think, because of what I can do in the kitchen, better cater to the pilgrims and the guests.
Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Lake Effect on WWM 89.7, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm here in St. Nazian's, Wisconsin with Abuna Moses. He is a deacon and also the chef at a monastery called Holy Resurrection Monastery. It's in the Sheboygan, Manitowoc area. What do you think the broader American public can learn from things like a fasting rule that is spiritually grounded as opposed to something like, you know, a health fad?
Okay. In reality, when we fast, we look at the three different aspects of the first being abstaining from certain foods and limiting the amount of food that we eat. The second being almsgiving. In the ancient world, when these guidelines for fasting were developed, what we eat now was just the poor man's food. Unfortunately, today, it's not the poor man's food.
So you mean like fish? You mean like
One of the things that we're allowed any day of the year is shellfish. today, in today's world, that's a luxury item. It's an expensive item. But back in the day, in Greece and in the Mediterranean, it was poor man's food. You went down to the shore, you collected some clams or some mussels or whatnot, and you had dinner. That was where you got your protein from. Today, you know, you can't do that. That's an arm and a leg. So although it's allowed during the fasting period, I rarely cook it because of the expense. I'll save that for a special occasion, someone's birthday, someone's feast day, that type of thing. But for the most part, we're eating, as best as I can make it, a poor man's diet. Greens, beans, pasta, rice, lots of veggies. So basically, yeah, a very a basic vegan diet.
Now I want to ask you, also a lot of people are cutting meat and they're looking for a lot of meat substitutes. Historically, we've known all about bean burgers and all this good stuff. But I mean, last year, 2-3 years, we've seen the rise of Impossible burgers and meat substitutes that are uncannily like meat. And I think some Catholic leaders have come out and said that's not quite in the spirit of fasting. So how would you navigate this kind of brave new world of not meat, meat?
I really haven't delved into that much. My philosophy on it is, if it's that close of an imitation of meat, I would tend to avoid it, just because it's something we're supposed to be. Even though if it meets the letter of the law, it really, you know, it, to me, it just doesn't feel right.
Because it's a matter of mindfulness, in your opinion.
Exactly. You're supposed to be living a poor life so that the money that we save from changing our diet can then be given as alms to the poor. They all work together. And these impossible burgers and the fake meat, to me, it's along the lines of shellfish or whatnot that, again, were allowed. But it's adding expense to the diet, which really goes against, at least in my mind, the whole overall picture.
I think, you know, when some people say they're giving something up for Lent, I think, you know, say it's chocolate, as is a frequent one, or candy, and then they break that, and they say, oh, I'm going to hell now, right, or something like that. I'm sure you've heard it, you know.
Yes.
I've broken the fast.
I deal with it all the time.
What kind of recommendations do you have for people who kind of fall off the horse and try to get back on? Should they just give up? Should they feel that, from in your perspective, how does that play?
I actually think that when you fall, that's a good thing, because it shows that you're trying. You fall, you get back up. You fall, you get back up. You just keep trying. You just keep. Unlike in the Western perspective, where they see that if you do break your fast, it's sinful. In the East, we've never seen it like that. The fast is there for our discipline, to help us grow closer to God, to aid in our prayer life. It's there for us. So we need to use it for our own benefit. If you do fall, no big deal. Pick yourself up, dust yourself off, get back on the wagon.
Well, thank you for setting us up. What are we having for dinner today?
Tonight I'm going to make pasta with white beans and broccoli rabe.
All right, let's get going.
All right. A lot of people, at least I found here in Wisconsin, are not familiar with broccoli rabe. Although it's called broccoli, it's really more along the lines of in the mustard family. So it's a bit of a bitter green with little bits that look like buds that look like broccoli, although it's not broccoli. I've got three bunches here that I have just chopped up, and we're going to blanch off.
Where do you find broccoli rabe in this area?
Oh, I can't find it here in St. Nazian's or in Manitowoc. So I went down to Milwaukee yesterday, and you can find it in any of the Outback markets or Whole Foods, any of the bigger supermarkets.
Okay.
So we're going to blanch that off. It looks like a lot, but it will cook down.
Like spinach, it cooks
exactly
down.
Exactly, like any green. So I'm just putting it in the boiling water. We're going to just let it blanch off for a minute or two, and then we'll strain it back out. That's it, just about a minute. So it's wilted and a nice, bright, vivid green, and I'm going to strain it out. But I'm going to save the water. I'm going to cook the pasta in the same water that I blanched the broccoli rabe in. We'll add some of that nice flavor to the pasta as well while it's cooking.
Is the water salted?
Yes.
How much do you salt your water when you're doing something like this?
I hate to give amounts, but it should taste like seawater. So it should be fairly heavily salted. Next step, I've got some fresh breadcrumbs that I made this morning, and we're going to toast them up with some garlic, about 5 or 6 cloves.
So then you're tossing the breadcrumbs into the oil and garlic.
And we'll let the whole thing toast up together.
So now you're tossing the pasta, and what kind of pasta did you choose?
Today I'm using arancetta, looks like little round ears. I like them because they're cupped to hold on to the oil and the garlic and the broccoli. Cannellini beans that I cooked in the Instapot this morning. With just some little bit of vegetable broth and a bay leaf, and that's about it.
Could canned beans work?
Canned beans work, yep. I find that the dried beans are a fraction of the cost, and they taste better. As far as I'm concerned, that's 2 good things. But yeah, canned beans are much quicker and easier. And
with a pressure pot, like an Instapot, you could do that pretty quickly, whereas probably before, you probably would have had to boil that for hours and hours.
Exactly. They would have taken, a couple of hours. I throw the beans in the Instapot in the morning, put them on, go to church, and I come out of church, and they're ready. All right, now I'm going to take the garlic and breadcrumbs out of the pan, but we're going to use the same pan to saute everything together. And then the breadcrumbs will be added at the end. Add a nice crunch. All right, I'm going to add a little bit more oil. Get it nice and hot.
How do you know when the oil is hot enough but not too hot?
Before it starts splattering or bubbling, at this point there's a little bit of breadcrumbs left in the pan, so I can kind of watch what they're doing to see when they're ready. And they're just starting to move around there. I'm going to throw the broccoli rabe in.
Now you're seasoning the broccoli rabe in the same pan that you had the breadcrumbs and the garlic with red pepper flakes. What else?
A bit of black pepper, kosher salt. The broccoli rabe is sauteing. It's absorbed a good amount of that oil. I'm adding the cooked cannellini beans. And I'm going to add a little bit of the cooking liquid that the pasta is cooking in, which will incorporate with everything else to make the sauce.
Now, that looks pretty wet right now with the water from the pasta. Does that cook down?
It's going to cook down. When the pasta is about 3/4 of the way cooked, I'm going to add it into the... And it will continue cooking, and it'll absorb what water is left.
So it's sort of like cooking rice in that way.
Exactly. A lot of people will cook pasta and pour sauce on top. I always like to cook my pasta about 3/4 of the way and finish its cooking in the sauce. Much more flavorful. The starch that's expelled from the pasta helps to thicken the sauce and bind everything together. A much more incorporated dish, much more like you'd find in Italy than here in America.
Well, that's very interesting. I never heard that before.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you grew up in an Italian-American household. How different was the kind of cooking that you did in Italy compared to that?
I grew up in an Italian-American neighborhood. And my aunts all married Italians, but I don't have any Italian blood, although it's my favorite cuisine in the world. So although we did eat predominantly Italian food, there's much more meat in the Italian-American diet than you would find in the everyday diet in Italy. Even, the big Italian-American dish, spaghetti and meatballs, is unheard of in Italy. You would never eat pasta and meatballs together. Meatballs would be one course, pasta would be another. They might be cooked together, but they're never served together.
Makes it easy cooking vegan then.
It does make it. And most traditional pasta dishes that you'll find in Italy are vegetarian.
So what do you feel like on your teeth when you're chewing the pasta? I mean, you don't want it to kind of stick, right?
No, it shouldn't stick, but like they say, al dente, you should have to still bite it. It shouldn't be what we would say in Italian-American, mouchard. It should be mushy. It should have some texture still to it. Some people will say throw it against the wall. I'm not quite so.
What's it supposed to do when you throw it against the wall?
It should stick.
When it's cooked?
When it's cooked.
Or is that overcooked?
I've never tried that, but I have heard that, so I don't know. But this pasta should be pretty much.
So you're using like a mesh spoon to drop it from the straight from the water right into the sauce.
Yes, it leaves a little bit of the water still on, and it allows me to keep this water in case I need more for my sauce.
So when if you pour it down the drain through a sieve, you'd lose the water.
Exactly. So if you are going to use a colander to strain it out, always take a couple of cups on the side in case you need it.
This is a very colorful dish, I must say.
It is, that nice, bright, vivid green, the white pasta and the beans.
So this broccoli rabe pasta that is standing on the stove, we're going to come back to it in just a few hours after the church service is over, but it only took about 20 minutes up to here. Is this something that people can do at home?
Sure, it's very easily done at home. I'm working on a cookbook which will include this recipe as well as quite a few other vegan recipes, as well as regular recipes. The book that we're working on is Feasting and Fasting Throughout the Church Year, and we're doing it from a monk and a mom's perspective. So if you have kids and how to incorporate vegan food into their diet, it might be something you'd be interested in looking at.
And you also hosted a web series, cooking videos.
Yes. A good friend of mine, Mother Gabriella, from a Byzantine Catholic nuns monastery in Ohio, Christ the Bridegroom Monastery, worked on this project together, Eastern Hospitality, where we did a number of videos where we talked about faith and spirituality, and we tied it together with food, and it was always a recipe that we cooked together.
Great, thanks.
Thank you.
Let my prayer arise in your sight as incense, and let the...
That was Lake Effect producer Julian Haida with Deacon Moses, a monk at the Holy Resurrection Monastery in St. Nazian's, Wisconsin. You can find his recipe for broccoli rabe pasta at wuwm.com.